page 81. We are back into the topic of Chanukah and what it's really about. And if you remember last class, we discussed the timeline. We're in the time of the second base of Migdash, second temple. And the Greeks have come, they've conquered the land. And we looked at the Rambam in Hilchos Chanukah, who says that they ruled over the Jewish people and they made certain decrees against them. We're going to see what the decrees were against them, because they wrote what they were, and why those particular decrees, and why they subjugated the Jews, and the amazing miracles, in the plural, that happened for our people that saved them from that time. We looked at the Gemara, and the Gemara asked the question, "My Chanukah? What exactly is Chanukah?" And he, the Gemara, in Shabbos, in Shabbat, described how the Chashmonaim, the Hasmoneans, went in, managed to remove the Greeks from the temple. Why they attacked the temple, we spoke about last class a little bit. We'll discuss more of why they went for that as opposed to everything else. And the great miracle of finding the oil, the Pach Shemen, that lasted for 8 days. So let's have a look a little bit what the Jewish sources have to say about these Greeks. What were they up to? What did they want? Were they just like Jew haters? I mean, did they just like despise us, want to hurt us? So we're going to have to say the answer to that is no, because then they would have done what Haman wanted to do to the Jewish people a couple of hundred years before, which was kill us. And although there was a war, it was more of a war of ideas and ideology than it was a war of fighting and blood. Okay? So let's have a look at a few Jewish sources, try to figure out exactly what the Greek view of life was. And this is the only Greek life you'll be seeing at Yeshiva University, just so you know. And what the problem with the Jewish people was, had with it. So the Gemara Megillah, page 81, halfway down, there's a small piece over here. And it tells the story of King Ptolemy, Maaseh Ptolemy HaMelech. Shekines Shivim Ushnaim Zekanim. He took 72 of the great Jewish sages and scholars, V'chnisan V'shivim V'shnaim Batim. And he put these 72 scholars into 72 houses or rooms. V'lo gila lehem, and he did not reveal to them, Alma kinsan, why he actually put them in these rooms. And then he went into each one of these 72 rooms to speak to these 72 sages. And he said to them, Kisvu li Torah Moshe Rabchem. Translate for me into Greek the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, that doesn't sound too much like a cruel thing to do. And the Gemara goes on to say that they actually did it. And they all came out with exactly the same translation into Greek. And they made a few changes, which supposedly was miraculous, the fact that they all made certain changes because they didn't want certain misrepresentations of the Greek. So what exactly did he want that for? Why did he want a translation of the Torah into Greek? So this Gemara is actually revealing what the Greeks were all about. And they were after wisdom. They wanted to know! You have this Torah, you Jews study it, we Greeks are all about learning, and we want the information that you have, and we want to spread it. We want to inculcate that knowledge into our says the Maharal of Prague. Call, bottom page 81, follow inside. Call in a Malchus Zesha Yuma Vakshim Chachma. What they wanted was wisdom. They were very smart people. You know, these Greek scholars, these Greek thinkers were walking around the, I don't know, the Pantheon, wherever it was, and they wanted to know, they wanted to understand. Ulafikach ha'uma azos bikshi kastu lehem chachmas ha'torah yivanis. They wanted the Torah, and they wanted it in Greek, so they could understand it. There wasn't any art scroll back then to translate it into English, Hebrew, or French, right? They wanted the, they wanted to see what this Torah thing is all about. As the Gemara tells us, and we just saw, this reveals something very important to us about the Greeks and what they really wanted and what the battle was. They wanted the information for themselves. And it shows that they were very into learning. Shows actually the Greeks were more into learning and information and study than any other nation. Okay, so that doesn't seem too bad. They want to know what the Jews are doing. They want to know what the Torah is all about. Right? I mean, you see the Torah is translated into many languages. Right? This is a wisdom. Actually, we know the Torah was given, was translated to 70 languages. So this idea doesn't seem too bad. Okay? However, it didn't stay that way. Because they wanted an exchange of ideas as opposed to just getting the information themselves. Let's have a look at page 82. And we see that the Greek time of conquest of the Jewish people is actually called a galus, a galut. Now, when you see the word galut, of which there's four we already spoke about, it's not a good time. Okay? Afal pi, Cain, even so, this period, tekufa zu nekra galus yavan, it's called the galut, the exile of the Greeks. Don't think the word galus only comes to teach you that Jews are being kicked out of Israel, like the previous galut, like the Babylonians. The Babylonians came in and they kicked us out of the land. Right? So that's one thing. And the Romans also are going to want to kick us out of the land as well. But the Greeks didn't. They were happy for us to stay in the land. They just wanted to control us, what we did, and the information we had. Is that your iPad? No, okay. So what exactly is the galus? Says Rav Chaim Friedlander, the galus is the galus, the galut of the Shechina. Hashem's presence, as it were, departed from the Jewish people. Dahainu, kashi hikshia ruchnias bein am Yisrael akarish baruch hu, muchashol menutak has v'shalom, it's as though the connection to the Jewish people was weakened or disconnected. The events of that time, what the Greeks wanted to do, was actually so. In other words, you can physically kick the Jews out, but you can also spiritually kick us out by removing Hashem's presence from us. So the Greeks didn't want physical control over us, they wanted spiritual control over the Jewish people. Okay? Kasher, so which is helping us understand what King Ptolemy actually wanted to do. And this pretty much influenced by their culture, according to their ways, and the nations, okay? And this is why this Greek exile is referred to as darkness, choshech. And there is no coincidence, by the way, that Hanukkah appears at the darkest time of the year. And how do we fight this today? We light lights, right? So the mitzvah always represents what the challenge was. The mitzvah always represents what the challenge was, right? Achashverosh and Haman wanted to kill us physically. How do we celebrate? We celebrate physically. We eat and we drink. The Greeks did not want to kill us physically. They wanted to destroy our religion and make it chol, make it non-spiritual in nature. Make it an academic pursuit. So how do we celebrate the Hanukkah miracles? We light lights, because light always represents chokhmah. I'm jumping to the end, but I'll just show you how it all comes full circle. And the mitzvahs always represent, this is always going to be true in Jewish thought, is going to represent what the challenge was at the time. Okay, let me just do this one piece. We'll take questions in a second. So we'll see that the Greek exile is called choshech, darkness. Ki l'chora hafucha me'akubu ba'olam. Right? What the whole accepted idea in the world and history of the Greeks was the idea of the blossoming of this, as he calls the fricha shel tarbus, the blossoming of enlightenment, of civilization, was rooted in Greece. Okay? And all the development that we have today of philosophy and science and culture, all this comes from the Greeks, which passed on to the Romans, and really invested itself in the entire Western world. So I mentioned last class the politics, the former politics we have, right? The buildings, the architecture, right? The learning, the formula, the way we learn, it all comes back to these Greeks, right? This is really, they're the ones that they were very, very smart, cultured people. But we have learned through history that although people can be very, very smart, and although people can be very, very brilliant, they don't always have the Jewish people's best intentions in mind. Okay? I mean, just to see a much later version, the Nazis also were very, very smart. Right? They were leaders of their day. Right? This is always a connection people always make, but there is some truth to it. Right? And just because people have great intelligence doesn't mean they have what we Jews refer to as wisdom. You're going to need a chair from the outside, Hannah. Okay? So we don't refer to it as enlightenment, right? This whole Greek exile is referred to as choshech. Although they were scholarly, their intention, he says, was to compete with the Torah's wisdom and our nation. Right? They wanted to assimilate us. Right? It was a spiritual assimilation. That was perfect timing. Yeah. Right, so that's what they want to do. Ella, turn to page 83, just so we fully understand this. Ella, he, and I'll tell it the other way around. Mikevan shayu chacham lachen ratzu l'hitcharut b'chochma Torah v'eis ha-Torah. B'ama Torah, they wanted to basically destroy the relationship between the Jewish people and the Torah. Right, they wanted to take the Torah and make an academic study. And by the way, people still do this today. Right, Torah, Bible, you know, Bible studies in many colleges and universities, and people study it as an academic pursuit. The Jewish people don't have that connection. The Torah is a spiritual thing. It's given by God, reveals the nature of this world, helps us to improve ourselves, our character traits, and our souls, and isn't an academic pursuit. That was the goal of the Greeks, and that's why they wanted to have it translated into Greek. They wanted to transform Judaism into some kind of subculture of Greece. That's really what they were after. Okay? And they were very, very brilliant. You should know that the Rambam describes Aristotle in very glowing terms. He says the guy's wisdom was almost level of a prophet, of a Navi. They had tremendous chachma that went with them. Right? So says the Ramban, this is the Ramban now, page 83, halfway down. This is his commentary on Vayikra, Tessayin. And he says that scientists, right, go in the way of Greece, right, like Aristotle. Right, and the problem is that they deny the reality. Kol davar zulasi hamurgashlo. If you can't see it, if you can't understand it, if you can't measure it, if you can't weigh it, it doesn't exist. But the whole scientific world, which came from the Greeks, which the Rambam says is pure arrogance, was that anything which was not understandable, if it didn't have some way of contemplating it in a scientific, rational way, it could not be true. And the whole point of Judaism was, although Judaism and Torah has an academic quality, it's information, you understand it, you inculcate it, but you don't know everything. So the real difference, the Ramban is pointing out over here, between the Greeks, or the Greek philosophy and the Jewish philosophy, was one of understanding. Right? How do we take in knowledge? How do they take in knowledge? You see? See, Greek wisdom is wisdom of the human intellect, which we're Jews are impressed by, but that cannot and never take the place of true Jewish wisdom. And they were very, very successful in the understanding laws of nature, right? The reason for it, you know? But we don't want nature to overtake God, you know, which people do, right? They always say, you know, nature decides it should be this way, right? They don't want to say God, they say nature. And if they're very frum, they'll say Mother Nature. You know, it's like the very frum version of the same thing, right? So we as Jews, we are... It's difficult because we do like it. We see a beauty of this chokhmah. We see a beauty in understanding. We like learning. However, it cannot supplant, it cannot take away from the spiritual nature and the worldview of the Jewish people, the Torah's teachings. Right? As Rav Freeland says, Sifrei Chaim on page 84, he says it so nicely. He says, a worldview like this contradicts the view of the Jewish people in the Torah's teachings. Right? They maintain the essence of creation and nature and tend to be subordinate to God's will. Right? They did believe in God, by the way, but different forms of gods. Right? The gods for them were actually lower than humans. See, and they were physical in nature. And that's why they worship the body. Right? Because we humans are the best. Right? The idea, as I said, the original Olympics were performed naked. The idea of the body and everything being physical and what I can see being perfect was a very non-Jewish and Greek idea. This really, when you get down to it, this idea of form and function against the Jewish view is really the main difference. It was a philosophical, ideological battle. And as I said last class, it wasn't just Jew against Greeks. Many Jews then, many Jews today, were very attracted to this. They liked this idea. You know, the idea of wisdom, because we Jews have always been, and many cultures, as the people of the book. We like wisdom. We want to understand. We want to know the reasons for things. Once they saw they weren't being successful with assimilating the Jews, then they started to ban certain mitzvot. Let's look at those mitzvot, and let's see if they're important. Actually, the custom of halacha nowadays, actually, to read a haftorah. And what's the haftorah? Right, well, that's the bit when everyone goes out for the Kiddush club. Right, well, that shouldn't be what it is. What's the haftorah? So the haftorah is we have a Torah, which we read over the entire year. So the entire Torah is read once a year. Yeah? So Antiochus, who was the king at this time, one of the things he banned was the reading of the Torah. He realized the connection of the Jewish people to the Judaism was the Torah and Torah learning. So he banned the Torah. So it happens to be that he did, for some reason, or it was permitted or accepted, or maybe it was done surreptitiously, they did allow readings of later books. Because we know we have things from history, we have the book of Yeshua, which follows the Torah, right? We have the Nevi'im, the Ksuvim, we have the prophets. So what the Jews of that day did, which we still do today, was they found a related theme in Jewish history that was written down, and they read something from the prophets or from the writings of Jewish literature, of Jewish scriptures, I should say. And by doing that, people would hear that without hearing the Torah, because they forbade the Torah reading, and thereby they would remember the topic and the theme in the Torah. So for example, sometimes it's not so easy to see the connection. Sometimes it's very easy. Right? For example, the Parsha of Shelach Lecha talks about Moshe Rabbeinu sending in the Meraglim, the spies, into Eretz Yisrael to spy it out, spy the land. Right? And they failed that mission. So the Haftorah, what's the Haftorah Shelach Lecha? What does it discuss? Somebody else who sent in spies to Eretz Yisrael, which was Yeshua. 40 years after that event, Yeshua sent in two spies into Eretz Yisrael to spy the land. That was actually a successful mission. They did a good job, right? They did a good job. So they take a piece of Haftorah, piece of the Torah, and they read that instead of, because they weren't allowed to read the Torah, they read that instead. That tradition still exists, and it's an important tradition, by the way. And the brachas that go with it are important brachas, and the reading itself is an important reading. But this actually goes back to Greek times, because one of the things the Greeks did was stop the reading of the Torah itself. Yeah? So let's have a look at the Ozer Midrashim, page 84. Yeah?
So none of the stories in the Haftorah are from the Torah itself?
No. From later time in Jewish history. So the Haftorah always comes from later writings and the prophets, like Yeshua, Isaiah. Now, all these things are still important, which is why they still exist in scriptures. We had many, many prophets through Jewish history, but the prophets that we keep are the ones that relate to the end of Jewish history. So they teach us about the war of Gog and Magog, teach us about Mashiach coming. There's still very important prophecies that are yet to happen. So it's not just like nice writings. They're actually prophecies that we need to read in order to know what's going to happen to us, you see. However, somehow they relate to a theme that's found in the Torah, which is not coincidence. So the rabbis found themes from later scriptures which triggered in people's minds the original reading. So they wouldn't be completely disconnected from the Torah. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
That's the exactly the traditional Haftorah, and it goes back to Greek times. Sure, this is the turn of the Second Temple. Absolutely, the prophets were completed before that time. No, not the First Temple. All gone. Prophecy gone. Finished. This is finished. And by the way, Hanukkah is going to be very, very important, because Hanukkah is going to be, prophecy is gone already, but Hanukkah is going to be the end of open miracles. This is the last open miracle, Nes Nigla, that happens to the Jewish people. See, what happened was, listen carefully, what happened was, up to this point, Jewish history was rich with open miracles. However, at this point, the spiritual world broke down, and this was the last open miracle. So we take this one last open Nes that happened for our people, the few being the many, and the light, and we kind of take that with us through Jewish history. It's begun to represent the whole idea of open miracles that happened to our people. So prophecy is gone, that's finished, that went with the Avodah Zarah, and open miracles have disappeared as well. So this is, I mean, we've really entered into darkness at this point. That's after, it's 200 years after this. The Romans take over the Greeks, and then, yeah. Yes, and that's what we're still in today. So let's look at the Midrash of it, page 84, halfway down. Let's look at the mitzvahs they banned, and let's see why these are the mitzvahs they banned. And by the way, we'll see that these mitzvahs are really the things that connect us in a very big way, which is why the Greeks banned them. First of all, they stopped Jews getting circumcisions. Right? They stopped Shabbat. They stopped Rosh Chodesh. And Rosh Chodesh means the whole, because Rosh Chodesh in those days, remember, wasn't a calendar. They used to literally track the moon. And if you didn't get the moon right, because we Jews follow the moon in terms of our, right? We're moonies. If we don't get the moon right, then you don't get the holidays right. So they stopped that as well. And remember, the Jewish calendar was the first mitzvah given to the Jewish people whilst we were in Mitzrayim. That's the first mitzvah given to the Jewish people as a nation. Okay? So it must be a very important one. The fact that Hashem decided that before we get to Har Sinai, we need to actually fit this Rosh Chodesh thing somehow into our lives. It shows how important it was. So Rav Gedalia Shor, he wants to explain why these mitzvahs are so important. And he says, Hayavan Rasul Levatel Chodesh, Shabbos Umila. They want to stop Chodesh, Shabbos, and Bris Mila. Usrichalavin Lama, why did they pick on these mitzvahs? Why didn't they stop, I don't know, matzah eating or sukkah dwelling? I mean, I'm going to assume they try to ban that as well. But these were the big ones they kind of like shot their gun at. Right? They pointed their gun and said, these three have to go. And he says, I'll tell you why. Shiyesh barak inyan shel sidur seder chadashim. When it comes to this mitzvah of the new month, this allows us to order our months. Okay, but the chodesh also, the Rosh Chodesh also represents something else: the waxing and the waning. Good words those. You don't hear those too often, unfortunately. The waxing and the waning of the moon represents chodesh, which can also mean chadash, the renewal of the Jewish people. You see, the Jewish people in Rosh Chodesh, which is a minor festival, I would say halal, it's a happy time for us, represents the idea of Jewish continuity. Because the Jewish people are like the moon. We go small, we get big. So the moon represents hischadshus, represents newness. That although we're going through difficulties, and we're going through pogroms and holocausts and exiles and goluses, we always look at the moon and we say, you know what, now we're small, but we will be big again. So the moon for the Jewish people, i.e. the holiday of Rosh Chodesh, has always represented a time of hope to our people. And a very important thing. So they wanted to stop the renewal inherent. And the Jewish people always follow this idea of newness and the month, which is inherent inside us. Okay. So when we make the bracha over the new moon, Berachas HaChodesh, Berachas HaLevana, we make those brachas, we're actually blessing God, as it were, and saying thank you for the idea that renewal is part of us as well. Yep. Shabbos, we understand. Shabbos is what keeps the Jewish people going. That is the source of all Kedusha, right? Of Kodesh. It's the source of all Bracha. I had a course I used to teach here on the ideas behind Shabbat. I need to reintroduce that course. We're losing our connection to Shabbat. All the reasons why we keep Shabbat. No, that's a halal. I used to teach that class. So yeah. Yeah, very important class. Many years ago, about 4 years ago, I used to teach that class. Then I took over with other class. Hilchos Shabbos I still teach. Yeah, that's the next semester will be Hilchos Shabbos. Yeah. However, the ideas behind Shabbat will see that you take Shabbos with the Jewish people, you take away the Jewish people. They don't know why that is, by the way. Do you ever discuss why? I discussed this already, you know. So we'll do that very quickly. Shabbos, actually, and interestingly, Bris Milah, are the only mitzvahs, together with tefillin, by the way, that are referred to as an oath, as a sign. Alright, we discussed this already? Did you ever discuss this with you? Osi Beinu Beinechem, it says about Shabbos. Shabbos is called a sign. A sign. Right, literally a sign. So why would Shabbos and Bris Milah be referred to as a sign, as well as tefillin, by the way? A sign. And by the way, that's why we have two with us all the time. Yeah? Why is it? What does it do with a sign? So what does a sign do? So a sign shows us where to go. It tells us where we are. But a sign also identifies what something is. Okay? So the Chafetz Chaim gives a beautiful analogy to this, which I'm going to update to 2012, if you don't mind. And the Chafetz Chaim says, imagine a store which we're going to call Ellie's Bagels. Now, if I look at that sign, I know two things. One, there's a guy called Ellie, and he's probably inside. Probably Israeli. And I know that if I go inside the store, I can purchase bagels. I don't go by there. Don't go inside there to purchase hardware, nails, hammers, clothing. Okay? Says the Chafetz Chaim, imagine you turn up at that store, and you see the lights are off, and the chairs are on the table, and the doors are locked. What do I know about Ellie's Bagels? It's closed. Come back a little bit later for my bagel. But let's say I turn up a day later, and the same scene presents itself. The lights are off, and the chairs are on the tables, and the doors are locked. But the sign is taken down. What do I know? Out of business. So the sign represents information, but also tells me if I'm in business. The Jewish people have a sign on our door. And the sign, our oath, reads Shabbos, excuse me, and Bris Milah. And tefillin. But we'll just focus on these two right now. Shabbos and Bris Milah. This is the sign. If these are taken away from our people, we are no longer in business. But we were promised by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to our patriarchs that we will always be in business. And therefore, it has to be these mitzvahs always exist. Which is why many mitzvahs don't exist among the Jewish people. We no longer have a Beis HaMikdash. That's a lot of mitzvahs. Right? We no longer have all the sacrifices. We're still a people. We no longer have the Yovel. There's many mitzvahs that we cannot do anymore. We're still a Jewish people. However, these mitzvahs, specifically of Shabbos and Bris Milah and Tefillin, as a side point, have to be there. Because if they're taken away, we're stopped. Hence, the Greeks understood this idea. They knew more about Judaism and Jewish wisdom than, unfortunately, most Jews today. And they understood that take away these mitzvahs, add to that the whole idea of renewal that the Jewish people bank on. With all the ups and downs of Jewish history, we always think that there will be an up. Take away the Jewish hope of survival, and you finish the Jewish people. And then you can take them, you can assimilate them, you can intermarry them, and they become like us. And we don't want that. Are we all clear on this? Yes, Hannah. You're lucky you're in my class.
Actually, like in the valley, like I came originally from Russia, where the belief and the assimilation was absolutely horrible.
Right.
In 3 generations, we went from Jews, yeah, to people that didn't even know we're supposed to kosher.
Right. It's actually four generations.
Well, through my family,
yeah, yeah.
So I'm just saying that the only thing that sort of kept us unwillingly, sort of, but like we got a lot of trouble for it, and like a lot of anti-Semitism was those two things. First of all, like the fact that like on Shabbat, even though we didn't keep Shabbat, we got together as a family. There was like a family dinner, and that our boys could not hide when they went to the public bathrooms that they were Jewish. And actually in Russia it was banned, and we had to do it secretly, like going to villages. But this is literally what told us we are different from all the rest.
Absolutely. Very nicely put. Very nicely put. Yeah. Nothing new. Nothing. It goes right back to Greek times. Nothing new. The Jewish people had to hide it, and many communities went through this. The Spanish went through such a concept as well, of banning mitzvot, actually being Jewish in general. The certain Persian communities had to go through such challenges as well, of hiding away. What's interesting is that you wouldn't have thought Bris Mila would have kept. It's just interesting. Of all the things, right, take an 8-day-old baby, right, and mutilating it, as they say, which it isn't, obviously, but you know. What's sad, however, in our day, we're seeing this backlash against Bris Mila in the Jewish world. It is absolutely terrible. I mean, it's like, this has been the thing that has kept us going. It sounds like a small thing, but it's a very big act for parents to bring their child forward, right? And by the way, no coincidence, it happens on the 8th day, right? And they said this number 8 is going to reflect it as well. And nowadays we're seeing, right, when non-Jews are trying to get against it, okay, is nothing new. But the Jewish people are going against it. They say actually Jews in that time as well, in Greek times, also did that. They actually tried to reverse their circumcision so they looked Greek. So they looked Greek.
I don't know.
Yeah, very, very sad. This is, there's a lot of movies now. It's very, very sad on this. Very, very sad. Rebecca, you want to say something?
In Germany, they just passed a law to ban circumcision.
Yeah.
So they're only now allowed to
Is it considered healthy? So the answer is the American Medical Association recently came out with a paper and says there are health benefits that come with it. Having said that, that is not the reason we do it. That could be a benefit of the mitzvah, but it's not the reason for the mitzvah. And many people, many people do circumcisions. Right, many people do. Yeah, sure, absolutely. I sat down with a doctor, a Jewish guy recently, not a religious guy, and he's like, I don't get what the big deal is. Like, I do so many circumcisions, right? And they do it straight away, but they do it like day one, day two. They don't wait 8 days. Well, you know, you're not, when you give birth, you're not hospital for 8 days anyway. Right, within 2 days they kick you out. Right, so try to give birth 12:01, not 11:59, by the way, because I consider day one as the side point. Just see, so you know, right? Of your stay in the hospital. So it may have health benefits, and they are saying that. I'm telling you, the people who are against it and trying to stop the Jewish people doing it, and the Jews say it is not a health reason they're against it. Otherwise, it'd be against smoking as fervently, which is much worse. Right, they're making a point. It's a philosophical thing. It really is. It really is. It honestly, when I see Jews against it, it breaks my heart. Out of all the things that we've actually kept doing as a nation, you know, I mean, how many people keep Shabbat? What, 10%, 15% if you're lucky in some parts of Eretz Yisrael, you know? And all the other mitzvahs that have been left. But this one thing that connects us, and it is a physical sign. There's a reason why it's a sign. There's a reason why it's on that part of the body. Right? The reproductive organs specifically. Why the idea of Kedusha and that of holiness in that particular area? It's a coincidence. I mean, the Torah could have told us, you know, to take a little bit off your ear or a little bit off your nose, which many Jews do anyway. But they could have done any other part, right? But why specifically? That is a reason why it's really an attack. I don't want to sound too, but it's really an attack on Judaism, you know.
I don't know if that's right, but like
that Jews around the time of like Jesus, the Jews started splitting up, and like, and he quote unquote accepted people who were like, who didn't want to do with you know.
They do say that there were various factions that splintered off, and that was, well, it was all the mitzvot, but specifically that was one of the, it always begins with that. Assimilation begins with the dropping of mitzvahs, dropping of Torah, dropping of Shabbos, and dropping of Bris Milah. It's specifically those things. They knew what they were doing. They knew what they were doing. As well as that, there was a physical and threat to the Jewish people. And says the Gemara in Shabbos, and Rashi says, Shigazri Yavanim al Kol Basulos Hanasuos, on all the virgins who were about to get married, Libael La Tafsatchil. They would have to go to the foreign governor who ran the city, and he raped them. He actually raped them. Okay? So the Jewish people were affected greatly by that as well. 85. After Rashi on Shabbat.
Is that like the head shaving?
That's very interesting. They do say that the idea of shaving it, which is not based on halacha whatsoever, I have heard, I've not read, I just heard, like you've heard, that the idea of shaving head was one of the reasons was culturally they used to violate the women, but if they saw them with their heads shaved, they... Right, there's no halachic basis to shave one's head, so it's definitely a sociological, cultural thing now. Now it's cultural because there's no such threat to do it. Okay, says the Bala Turim that actually we know that Yitzchak dug wells in Rehovos, and the Bala Turim, who takes the deep understanding, the Remez and the Drush over here, he says actually this was a Masa Avot similar Banim, actions of our forefathers are passed down to their descendants. He says that the Greeks. This is actually an idea. The Greeks decreed the Jewish women could not immerse in the mikveh, right? Thereby, they couldn't be have children. They couldn't be intimate with their husbands, and thereby couldn't have children. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a miracle at that time that they suddenly there were sproutings of water that the women were able to go secretly around their homes into their own mikvahos, right? So they banned going to the mikveh, which stops relationships, stops having Jewish babies. See? So that's another thing that they try to do to us. Let me just go through. We'll take questions in a second, Rebecca, darling. Let me just finish a little bit of some of the sources. So once again, the Golas is called Choshech, and it darkened the eyes of the Jewish people. And the main goal was they wanted to assimilate the Jews into Greek society, which they were, by the way, very successful doing. Right? The fact that only a small band was willing to fight up against them shows they did a pretty good job when it came to stopping the Jewish people feeling free and becoming and remaining the holy nation. Yeah. Yeah. I never heard that. Could be a beautiful vault. I'm not sure, but it sounds very, very nice. Stephanie.
How did the Greeks find out all this stuff? Is it because of that guy who told the 72 elders to...
King Ptolemy. No, they went to wisdom, right? They understood, they knew. But this is nothing new, right? This idea of non-Jews getting information to use against us was not new. Vashti used to make the Jewish women work. We'll discuss this next semester. Who's in my class last semester? Leslie, who's my... What did Vashti do? Let's see if you remember. What did Vashti do?
Do something, and I forget what it was.
Yeah, I said that part. You got a bit... I haven't said it yet.
Oh, you?
Yeah. Do I remember what it was? She made the Jewish people... Right, Jewish women work on Shabbos. Right, she actually made that. And she says, so it says that she was killed on the seventh day. The Megillah actually goes out of its way to say she was killed on the seventh day, Yom HaShvi. And that was Midah Kenegan Midah, because she would make the Jewish women work on the seventh day, Shabbos. Why did she do that? Because it was a known thing, say Chazal, that Jews are protected physically. We have a Haganah from Shabbos. I need to do the Shabbos course again. You're not going to do it next year. I'm doing it next year.
Which one?
Shabbos, my Shabbat course. They actually...
Intermediate?
Yeah. They actually... No. I think I'll do it at this level, actually. They actually made... Jewish people are protected physically by Shabbos. And they learn it out from the story in the Torah where a Jew broke Shabbos and then the Amalek came to attack us right afterwards. Because there was a pizza. Once they broke Shabbos, there was actually physically less protection that we get. One of the gifts of Shabbat, it actually gives us a physical protection from our enemies. It's a shield. It's the Iron Dome of the Jewish people, if you will, that keep Shabbat. Seriously. So Vashti knew that and actually used it against us. And she actually tried to make the Jewish women work, but it wasn't going to work because they were forced into it. Right? They weren't held culpable, so her plan didn't work, and she was killed instead on the seventh day. Midah k'neged midah. But she knew that. That's a very subtle point. Right? It's not like, most Jews don't know that, you know what I'm saying? Or maybe then they did. But this idea of non-Jews knowing this information and using it against us goes right back. It goes right back. I mean the Egyptians... Right, they want to stop us having babies as well. That's more just to stop us like multiplying. Yeah.
Is the mitzvah of Brit Milah still fulfilled if it's not like on the eighth day with the manna? Like a lot of people now, like a lot of modern.
Okay, so the mitzvah of Brit Milah needs to have someone doing a l'shem mitzvah, and that means if a doctor does it, there's two parts. One's the Brit Milah, so the prayer as well. If a person, which is very common, has a Brit Milah, but does not do it l'shem mitzvah, it's done by a doctor l'shem mitzvah, they got rid of the negative but haven't done the positive, so later on they actually do tis adam, they take a little bit of blood out, small amount, l'shem mitzvah. This is very common. I've actually helped many individuals who've had bris milah from a doctor, and they just, a mole comes along and it's a very small amount of blood is taken out from that area, you don't have to go into it, and they do l'shem mitzvah and the mitzvah's done. It's actually a very special mitzvah, by the way, if you know some, well, I don't ask you to talk about it, but you can refer them to me if an individual...
There was an off-Broadway show called Circumcise Me, and it was an Orthodox guy who had started off non-Jewish and he ended up having recircumcisions because he went from like a foreign...
Yep. Thank you for that. Okay, we're on page 86. No comments. I don't know what to say. Anything I say will not be appropriate, so I'm not going to say anything at all. So I'm going to learn from my wealth and keep my mouth shut. Okay. Okay, let's just follow. Let's look at, there's a nice piece from Ken Spiro in his great book, Crash Course in Jewish History, which I really recommend, by the way. It's really a great book. If you want a good summary, well, what about Cliff Notes, Our Generation? I don't have time. It's actually a really good summary. So he says, in the year 167 BCE, there's a whole persecution of Jews by the Greeks. It's in full swing. Okay, we said there's a philosophical problem. Now it's turned into a mitzvah problem for us. And it will eventually become a problem of survival. The Greek troops show up in the town of Modi'in, right, which actually is still there, right? It's a big Jewish area, right? Just in the west of Jerusalem, yep. It's on the highway from Jerusalem to Tel Aviv, and the Jews sacrificed an unkosher animal to the Greek gods. The elder of the town, Matityahu, who was a famous rap star of the day, no joking. He's a Kohen, and he refuses, right? And actually, it says in the Book of Maccabees, if all the nations that live under the rule of the king obey him, and have chosen to do his commandments, departing each one from the religion of his fathers, yet I and my sons and my brothers will... I think there were like... How many are there? Like 13 of them? 18 of them? There's a whole group of them, a band. And we'll depart, and we live by the covenant of our fathers. We will not obey the king's word by turning aside from our religion to the right or the left. And they actually killed him. They killed him. Right? There was a Hellenized Jew... Right, one of the Jews who had joined, they're called the Hellenized ones. These are the Jews who joined the Greeks. And he was in the town, and he was willing to do it. Right? He was about to sacrifice the animal, and Matityahu kills him. Also killing the Greek official who was there. And he says, follow me, all for God's law and stand by the covenant. And actually, it was like a civil war. It was like a shtickl civil war that was happening at that time. Yeah. Okay, just turn over the page, because there's a bit of repetition. Page 87 at the bottom, if you don't mind. So we said there were various, there was civil war happening at this time as well. There was banning of mitzvahs. It was a very difficult time for the Jewish people in the land of Eretz Yisrael. Okay? So one of the main symbols of this fight was the menorah. We discussed last class. The menorah represents Jewish wisdom, Jewish understanding, Jewish chokhmah. And that's why the Greeks went in. They defiled, why did they go to the temple? Because they knew the temple was the spiritual home of the Jewish people. That's why they went in there. Right? Why did they just go to the house and then kill everyone? But they wanted to make a point. And we said the great miracle was that although they defiled, we found a small pach shemen, a small oil canister, which had enough for one day. Says Rav Yosef Karo, bottom page 87, Beis Yosef, he says the reason they needed to light the menorah for 8 days was that very container of oil was because of all the Jewish people ritually impure from this war, right? And it was impossible to prepare new pure oil until a 7-day waiting period had passed. So they themselves had to purify themselves, right? In addition to 1 day required for the pressing of the oils and prepare it. So it's a 7-day process. They were tameh from the war, from the fighting. That to be tameh mesik, 7 days.
Yeah, this makes more sense because most of the olive trees are really close to Jerusalem.
Okay, so that's one of the answers. This is one of them. There's many, many answers to this question. This is just one of them. Okay. So the Ran over here, he writes, "Varan kaso shaya lahem shemen tahor rachok arba yamim." It was actually 4 days away. 4 days away. V'tzricho shmoni yamim bein halicha v'chazara. So it's 8 days, 4 days to get there, and 4 days to get back to pick up the oil. Okay. So we can see over here why really it should be a 7-day festival. But we make an eighth, okay? And this is a very, very famous, yeah?
This might seem like a silly question, but how do they know things like that? Like it was 4 days away?
It wasn't a tree, just they knew because they used to bring in oil all the time from Chutz Yerushalayim into Yerushalayim. So this was a common route they would have.
Rabbi Karo.
This is part of the tradition. Yeah, it's just that information that they knew this was what it was about. It was a 4-day journey, and he has his sources to reveal it to him. I haven't seen it anywhere else. It's like common knowledge, I guess. I don't know. So you have the Kara Vikala made it, page 88, follow inside. Vikala made that Lamakovu Shemina Yomem with the cave and Shem and Shafa Shemapachaya Boik Kedidadlik Laila Achas. They had enough oil to last 1 day. So why are we celebrating for 8 days? V'nimsa shaloi nasa nes ela b'shiva leilos. It's a 7-night miracle, not an 8-night miracle. We should celebrate for 8 days, 7 days rather. So he says, v'yesh lomar, he'll give a couple of explanations. Follow inside. Shechilaku shemesh v'pachlo shemana chalakim. They took 1 day's worth, they cut it into 8 pieces, 8 sections, knowing full well that it's going to take 8 days to get the new oil. So the first night was a miracle because they only had an eighth of what they needed. Second night was obviously a miracle. It was also an eighth. Third night, fourth night, fifth night. So every night was its own miracle. The miracle was they put in a small amount, but it lasted till the morning. That means every single night, all 8 nights is a miracle. I will celebrate for 8 nights. Because you have enough oil for 1 day. You take that 1 day's worth.
Why wasn't it a miracle for 1 day?
Because every night you had that small piece that lasted an entire night.
Oh, so you're saying that the seven is the
day. Yeah, every day, every one of the 8 days was its own nes. That's one answer. V'yod yesh lomar shalachash nasan shem benorah, menorah kashiyavah nishar pach. Another answer is actually put it all in, but lasted all 8 days. All right? The oil level remained exactly the same. So different opinions as to, so that was a miracle on the first day, second day, third day, fourth day, all through the 8 days. Yeah.
This may seem like a dumb question, but like...
Why don't we always preface the questions with silly questions? No, questions are never dumb. Answers are dumb. Questions are very rarely dumb.
So,
So I'm assuming they meant like the
Now this is the menorah. No, this is the menorah. We're not discussing. Chanukiah is a year later. We're dealing with the menorah. The menorah's got three and one in the middle, seven branches. Every day the Kohen Gadol would light that, and it would last till the morning, except one light that would last 24 hours. They managed to find one pachof shemen, one oil that was going to last for one day. Okay. It managed somehow, different opinions, to last all 8 days. Why did you need 8 days worth? Because that's how long it takes to get the oil. Or they were tamei from the war, and they had to wait 7 days to immerse in the mikveh and become pure. Okay? So different opinions. So what happened was, it lasted for 8 days, this oil. Either because they cut up to eight sections, or the oil just kind of refilled by itself. Different opinions what the exact miracle was. Right? This is machlokes, right? It's all different opinions as to exactly what that was. Once we have that, a year later, to remember the 8 days, they light eight lights. One each day. And we'll see different opinions. Some say you count up, some say you count down. That's Hillel and Shammai, we'll see it later on. So they weren't lighting the Chanukiah. I mean, we refer to it as a menorah, but it's not a menorah that we light today. It's actually a Chanukiah, right? It's a remembrance of the miracle of Hanukkah. Are we following that? That's what. Stephanie, does that make sense? Are you following? Yeah?
Yeah.
That's a very good question. That's actually a brilliant answer as well, if I say so myself. Okay. Okay, so the oil is one part. The other part is the war itself. Ika mash kavu yemei Chanukah b'shvu shayu nitzachim es yevanim rak shalohi ya nirusha hayaka nischos azali de nes. Okay, the essence of the establishment of the Chanukah festival, the Maharal, was the military defeat of the Greeks. Except that it was not apparent to them that it was such a major miracle. Therefore, that was a miracle, but it wasn't so revealed. However, the miracle of the menorah that was performed for them, right, that really was shown as representing the miracle itself.
So, what are you saying? You're saying that it was...
So, there was two miracles. One is the few of the many, yeah. But that wasn't... So, that's not as a revealed miracle as the menorah. So, the menorah is really what we...
What was the first miracle?
The few, very few Greeks, right, beat this large army. But that takes, a good strategy, you can have various explanations for that. You see? So we don't... Yes.
I heard something that the war really was supposed to be the main miracle and that the oil part was just kind of trumped up more.
Yes, really was that. They do say that, which is why an Al-Hanissim we use, we'll see later on, discuss the Brach of Al-Hanissim, we'll see that's the miracle referred to. That's what we refer to. But the oil has much greater representation of the holiday and the Nes, but that is true. Mm-hmm. That is absolutely true. Okay, you know what? Let's stop over there. We did a lot today, whether you realize it or not.
What are we going to do when we finish?
We're going to have a seum. We're going to celebrate.
Yeah.
And we're going to have a big party.
Every
night.